Welcome to season 4 of the XL podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Selwood, and I'll be bringing you news, views, and opinions from a variety of people, all relating to the driver training industry. During this season, I'll be talking to local personalities from here in the Southwest, but also nationally recognised figures, all of whom will be giving their take on the state of the driver training industry as it is at the moment, and also giving you help and support and tips to help you become a better instructor. Hello everybody, we're into season 4 now of the XL podcast, and I am delighted to have with me today, I'll choose my words carefully, part of a very flourishing and developing double act. Now the first part of this act was with me back in season 2, that was Mick Knowles. We're jumping onto the other, I won't say correct side of the Pennines, I'll leave that to my guest today, the other half of Knowledgeably Instructor Training, the Lee part of it, and I'm ever so pleased to have with me today, and thank you for giving up your time, to Lee Jowett.
Hi, Kev. Yeah, you okay?
I'm very well, thanks. And at last we've managed to sort out the gremlins, even though you do sound a little bit faint, but we've got you there. I can hear you. I can understand what you're saying. Anybody who wants to listen to this, if you are a little bit faint, it'll make sure they concentrate properly. Anyway, we can talk about how you've got to where you are now. And I will just say that Lee and Mick and ourselves here at our driving school at Training Wheels, we do share the same social media consultant. So I've got a bit of Chelsea Belgian bun sticking out of my mouth. At least nobody can see it. social media consultant. Your colleague usually uses a different word to consultant on it, and she has mentioned to me today that I hear you're speaking to somebody who supports United. I won't say what word she used, but we'll leave the pleasantries for all of that. I'm sure Alison is going to be listening into this at some point and giving her thoughts on it. But anyway, that's by the by. What I like to do with everybody, first of all, is just to talk about how you've got to where you are now. So if you know, sort of give us a bit of a timeline as to how you've got here.
I decided in around about 2009 that I wanted to be a driving instructor. It was earlier than that, it was 2008. I got made redundant from a job. It was a bit of a nightmare. And I always wanted to teach. And so I always enjoyed driving, so I hadn't thought of it earlier, but I put two and two together, hopefully got four, and decided to...
You're going to teach maths then, were you?
Yeah. It's about as good as I get at maths. So I decided to sort of become a driving instructor. I got a bit lucky with the qualifying process, so managed to stay out of the clutches of some of the, you know, well-renowned schools, got some local training, and I qualified. And at the time, going back, it was PSTs. It was telling people what to do and telling them again what to do and backing off and telling them what they've done wrong. And I thought, well, this can't be it for teaching. This can't be everything. I got incredibly lucky, really, that very local to me was probably who I would consider to be my first mentor, Claire Wilmot.
I actually came up and, 2 or 3 years after I started, And I started qualified in 2007. I actually came up to Oldham to do a day's work with Claire.
Yeah, she's phenomenal. Her knowledge is outstanding. And Jeff,
that's where I got the what ifs from. That's where I really got into what ifs.
Yeah, really good for developing context. Getting people to learn in multiple different ways from one situation. So, but yeah, she's phenomenal. So, I found her when I was looking for a driving school to sort of take a franchise with, and I researched, like I do with everything, researched her and her driving school, Latics, and I looked at what she'd done and I thought, that's where I want to be.
Yeah.
And so I made contact with her. I think she said I was a weirdo. I think that was the word she used.
Pretty good judge of character.
Yeah. I was just like, right, what books can I read? What can I do? What courses are they? What? She's like, how long have you been qualified? I'm like, oh, about 3 months. She's like, you're a weirdo. I'm like, enough, yeah, but I want to do this. I want to do what you've done, and blah, blah, blah. So she was like my first mentor. It was great because I'd find courses. I mean, she actually created with Kathy Higgins. They created the first coaching course that I did. It was a one-day course. And then where did it go next? Between her and Kathy, they were doing loads at the time of courses and workshops. And so I found people within the workshops and courses, and Diane Hall, Dr. Julia Malkin at the time was doing her Revolutions courses. So they're people that I remember seeing, and I did Diane's course. I was going to do Julia's Revolutions workshop. I actually got round to it until she sort of went off the radar a little bit, and now she's back around. So I found some amazing people just, you know, through being associated with Claire. And if I found anybody else, like try coaching, I could ask Claire, and Claire would undoubtedly know them. And she was like, oh, yeah, you've got to do that, you know, the BTEC, get that done, it'd be brilliant for you. So I went and did that, and then found who I would consider to be my second mentor and probably my biggest influence in terms of what I do, you know, who I'd give the most credit to for helping me to develop, which was Sue McCormack. Just absolutely phenomenal. Graham as well. Absolute unbelievable knowledge between the pair of them.
I did the BTEC with those two. Yeah.
Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal, the pair of them. But just, Sue's insight, and they asked me to later on deliver the BTEC 4 for them. That helped me to develop massively because, you know, one thing doing it, but to actually deliver it and get the understanding from the notes, the research, the training, and everything that came with delivering it. And in between times, I was also a driving instructor, and I spent, you know, 10 years more teaching learners, which I really enjoyed, and trying new things and putting things into practice. And eventually I got to the point where I started to feel like I knew things enough to go and put things down on sort of paper myself and start creating my own sort of content with the knowledge that I'd gained and the experience that I had. I'd found myself able to look at something that I knew, look at the experience that I got, and sort of take it in different ways and understand it, and all sorts of things like that that I think are important. If you're going to write your own content, you don't want to just rewrite somebody else's content.
Yeah.
You want to be able to look at it and apply it in different ways and use it in ways that you've not seen before and make it your own and make it original and et cetera, et cetera. So, it's a brief overview. I think that kind of covers it. It's all kinds of things I've done in between. Just generally been lucky, I think, with finding the right people and doing the right training and getting where I wanted to get to. You know, where I wanted to get to.
Yeah, Yeah, as you say, it's finding the right people. Mm. It's doing your research as well. Yeah. It's all very well somebody saying go and see or so and so, but yeah, it's with all of this, you know, anybody who wants to train, you know, I say what when they come and talk to me, I say, how much research have you done?
Yeah.
Am I the first person you've spoken to? Yeah. Because if I am the first person, I don't want me to be the last person. Go and find out from others as well.
Yeah.
You know, I may be the right fit, I may not be. But unless you go and find out,
yeah, totally agree.
You won't know.
It's somebody, somebody, and in the mate again, been very, very lucky. We've probably delivered our workshops now to close to 700 ADIs up and down the country. And we've only had a couple of people that it wasn't right for, literally two.
Yeah.
And one of them kind of made a bit of a show of herself and decided that because there was a bar downstairs, she was just going to leave the room, 30 people there. She had her own little group of people. And she was going to go and just sit in the bar and have a drink. She wasn't even going to go home. So everyone could see that she'd... and her issue was that earlier in the day, she'd asked, when are you just going to tell us what to say? When are you just going to tell us what we need to say? And you talk about doing your research. If anyone wants to look at the write-up that we... that we've put on our website for the course that we deliver, it literally says it within about the first five or six lines, unlike other courses that simply tell you what to say, this course doesn't do that. I can't help you, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Some people can't be helped, can they?
No, but hey-ho, it wasn't right for her, and I've no issue with that. I've no issue with that.
Yeah.
Well within her rights, but, you know, at least go home, or don't make a show of yourself, but do your research first, and then you won't end up on a course that you don't want to be at.
Now I have got to try and sort of work out the timeline from when you and Mick got together, because you used the COVID break very profitably yourself, didn't you, to sort out in your own mind what you wanted to do and where you wanted to go.
Mm.
So where does the Yorkshireman come into all this?
Well, unfortunately, around the same time, just after maybe. Just before, I think it was the September before COVID, I met Mick for the first time at a tri-coaching. It was a presentation skills course that we both went on.
Yeah.
And being a Yorkshireman, I bought him some drinks because...
You're still waiting for the return.
And we got talking and, you know, and we got on, and he was running a PDI Facebook group at the time. He asked me if I'd sort of wanted to join him on that, giving help and support to PDIs, which I did. And we just ended up talking more and more. And like you say, I used COVID to write Meet the Standards. So my series of ebooks around standards check competencies, and also really mainly about client-centered learning. And it just kept me sane through COVID. It gave me something to focus on. And actually, ultimately, eventually, it's actually made me a decent amount of money as well. So it's been quite a good day. I didn't do it really for money, and it's been an added bonus. But so that was good. And then Mick gave me a ring one day. It was just after the B+E had been cancelled. I spoke to him that day because he'd lost about 15 grand in about an hour.
thank you, DBSA.
So I stopped him jumping off the bridge and talked him down. And he loves losing money. nothing he likes more than. And so, yeah, he gave me a ring and just said, you know, we're both training PDIs. We're both running driving schools. Why don't we form a training company together? And we talked about, at the time, I mean, Tri Coaching was just phenomenal. And I don't think I'd be where I am, although I did want to get to where I've got to and where I'm, you know, I've got a way towards where I want to get to. But it's hard to see who else would have helped me as massively to develop as Tri Coaching did. But they'd taken pretty much everything they did and put it on Zoom. And whilst it's, for me, it's an effective way, I just don't overly enjoy it. But we talked about getting out and about and, you know, and getting into classrooms and traveling. And we love it, to be fair. So that was about the October after COVID. I don't know what year that is now. It's all moulded into
one. Oh, it all morphs into one to me, all of this.
And then started work on the course, writing that, got that ready for, we were supposed to run it in April, wasn't quite finished but at that point, so put it back. And we did our first run of the standards check workshop on the 10th of June 2022, I think. And we both know it's the 10th of June because it's both of our wedding anniversaries. And we're not married to each other. We're not Bert and Ernie. So.
Dispel all the rumours and myths now, shall we?
So, yeah, that was another little coincidence. But, yeah, so, and, yeah, it works really well, I think. You know, I have my strengths, Mick has his strengths, and, and I have my weaknesses, and I think we kind of balance each other out there because, it's quite good. And we get on, so that's good.
And you, because Mick was doing the DID podcast, wasn't it, to start with, which has now obviously changed to the KIP podcast. KIP Mag wasn't DID Mag before, was it?
No.
That came out.
So when we started the company, it's funny because what tends to happen is one of us will ring the other one. The other one will pick the phone up, and the first thing we'll say is, "I've got an idea," and then the other one's like, "Oh God,
oh God,
what do I do now?" It was about a month before we were due to start the company, or not to start, but to launch it. And I just had an idea. I just thought it'd be nice if we had something to go out with when we start the company, and maybe some people that. That I know well, that I like, that I really respect, would also like to be involved in it. And you know what? They've been great. Diane Hall, Julia Malkin, it was me and Mick to start with, Julia and Diane. Was there anybody else at that stage?
You're not going to get forgiven if you don't mention Alison.
But she didn't join right at the beginning.
Oh, right.
I'm trying to think who was in the very first one, but it might have just been the four of us on the first one, and then we've added two since. So, yeah, the brilliant, as I call her, the brilliant Alison Harper joined.
Careful. Let's not go overboard.
She's really good. So she joined, and she writes a blog for us on social media. The even maybe more brilliant San Harper has joined as well on mindfulness. We've got the brilliant Terry Cook, from the Instructor podcast. We have Ray Seagrave, fabulous PDI and ADI trainer. That could be everyone. I hope I haven't missed anyone out. I think I've covered everybody, but so That goes out every month to the industry for free. We've got about 2,500, more than that now, subscribers. So that's going really well. We've just joined also, got a partnership with The Honest Truth, which I think...
I've had a phone, I've missed a phone call from Ollie Taylor today.
Yeah, you're speaking to him.
Yeah, it's because I've known Ollie for over 10 years.
Yes, he's from near you, isn't he?
Yeah. So I know what he wants to talk to me about. Yes, I've had just mention the Honest Truth for a moment. I'm struggling to contain my anger down here because he's offered Devon and Cornwall ADIs half price membership of the Honest Truth. And I put on our Facebook group down here where there's close to 300 ADIs and PDIs in the group about this offer that he's got. Not one person took it up. Then I got a little bit arsy about it and I got told you're being inflammatory. I thought, okay, fair enough, I'll just have to leave it. But I've been scared stiff to talk to Ollie because I know that's what he's going to ask me about and I'm going to be so embarrassed. But, you know, I'm going to say to him, I think what the best thing to do is if you could do a video that one of the admins of the group could put on there, come direct from you, not from me, because if I go, I'm going to speak my mind and upset people. But hey ho, sorry, that's a rant over.
No, you're right. It's a funny one, isn't it? That I used to do a lot for my local ADIs, organising. In the last 12 months, I've had to cancel Diane Hall twice. No, Diane Hall once and Julia Malkin twice, who were willing to come to their doorstep and deliver a full, brilliant, full day's training. So I've just turned away from it now. I'm not wasting any more time trying to help people. But what a shame, you know, what a brilliant, you know. And really, you care about road safety.
Yeah, that's what gets me about it. You know, the for a price of a cup of coffee a month.
No, it's horrible, isn't it? It's horrible. But, you know, it's not your fault. There's nothing that you can do about it. And, you know, and I felt the same, having to cancel Julia and Diane. Yeah. But what can you do? There's nothing. Oh, and Sam Harper as well, by the way, yes. So.
Yeah.
But what can you do?
Yeah.
You know.
Anyway, let's move on to more positive things. Because what I'm really quite intrigued in is how Kit has developed. And I wouldn't say it's unique, but it's certainly very different, the approach you have of this top-down approach.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to be absolutely honest with you. The first time I saw that, or heard it, my heart sank. Because to me, in the past, from my background of teaching, a top-down approach was the senior management of any organisation imposing what they want on something. And then when I looked into it and found out what it was, I was like, you idiot, this is nothing of that sort whatsoever. It is totally and utterly as far from that as you could possibly be. I'll leave you to just explain how that came about and why you're doing it this way.
Well, to some extent, we owe a bit of a favour to Martin Leather for making it more prominent. But I looked at what I wanted to build the course around, it's actually a quote from the Merit Report, and we wanted the course to centre around the GDE matrix and coaching and client-centred learning. And that's always stood out to me because it's a complete flip on its head. In fact, it's taking things that were never even considered to be part of our role, and suggesting that they're the fundamental parts of what we do. It's the starting point. And then also with the DVSA's syllabus, Unit 1 of DVSA's syllabus is all about a top-down approach, although whether they know that is debatable. But, well, you know, and I'm not here to sit in judgment of DVSA, but we had a meeting with their former, now retired, head of ADI last August, and he decided to have a go at trainers, and I was the only trainer in the room, so, and suggest that if DVSA aren't regulating trainers, then how do we know that they're any good? And, you know, that ADI should only go and see trainers that are regulated by DVSA. And I was like, well, I've gone and sought training from outside of the industry, like Dr. Lisa Dawn at Cranfield University. Didn't seem to know who she was. Ian Edwards at Nottingham University didn't seem to have any idea who he was. Anyway, he annoyed me at some point, so I started, because I've long since, I've long held the theory that they don't know what's in their own materials. So he was saying something about coaching has always been in the industry. It's no different. Who's been doing coaching for years and years, and there's instructors putting their hands up. So I just said, no. I said, no, I can't have that. I said, because I travel up and down the country, and we go and see instructors all over the country, and they're not delivering lessons around what's in the contents of Unit 1 of your syllabus. But I didn't tell him what Unit 1 of his syllabus contained. And then I said, and, you know, we see reports from part threes and standards checks. And, you know, I said, sure, Vans, who in this room's pupils get nervous on their standards checks? And all their hands went up. I said, and we never see written in the feedback anything related to Unit 1 of your syllabus. And then somebody said to him, what is Unit 1 of the syllabus? And he had to turn around in front of everyone and say, I don't know.
Crazy. Yes.
So Unit 1 basically says that the emotional responses of the driver can impact on the cause of collisions, and the emotional responses of any passengers can all impact on the cause of collisions. So to me, that's level 4 being the driver, yeah. Level 3 being the passengers, the context of the journey. And it's really starting point of their syllabus, Unit 1, is really taking a top-down approach.
Yeah.
The merit report quotes us saying that that's what we must do from a driver training perspective. We must turn driving instruction upside down and take a top-down approach to driver training with regards to the goals for driver education matrix. So we must start at level 4 and work downwards. And we go through in the course, our ADIs and PDIs can actually do that. And it's not, you know, it's not as big a shift as it might sound like. It's just incorporating more into your reflection than maybe we used to do. So, so that was kind of the where I wanted to go with the workshop.
Yeah.
So that was part of it, and then we were delivering the workshop, and I think Mick commented on something on Facebook about it not being a top-down approach, and Martin Leather picked up on it and did a weekly rant accusing Mick of using this made-up reference to sell our courses, and so we just took it on from there, like we do. Yeah. And it's now really it's our sort of strap line. But yeah, actually, you know, we can't take credit for it because it did come about as part of merit, and that's all the way back in 2005. So that people don't know about it.
Like with anything, I did the recording with Bob Morton last year. Yes. He was, you know, he was saying about how a lot of what he does is he's picked up from other people and just slant. What he wants. So, you know, we don't have to go reinventing things. We just turn it to the way that we want it. I think also with the GDE matrix, we don't have to be explicitly mentioning it.
No.
You know, I have a knowledge of it, but I can remember when I first came across dear Lou, she always emphasised the emotive words. Never actually mentioned, or actually I don't remember her ever mentioning the GDE matrix, but, you know, latching onto the emotive words. And as you are, and as Cecil B. DeMille is doing with his videos at the moment, that he's just done the one on focus on the person, not the form. And, you know, find out what the hell's going on. Why are you doing it?
Yes.
And, you know, that really is looking, you know, going to levels 3 and 4, whereas traditionally the driving test has been at levels 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, kind of rightly so, but there's a huge miss. I always think that the driving test is probably the biggest example of how massively the context of a journey can impact on somebody's driving behaviour for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
They can drive with us for 3 months without us going near the dual controls, and in 30 minutes an examiner's used them 3 times. So what a huge miss it is that, you know, DVSA examiners aren't there to give them that lesson.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be, you know, we can do that and we should do that, but it would be really effective coming from an examiner at the end if they just asked them, how did you feel? What was different for you today? Think about this, because one day you're going to come here and you're going to pass. And I'm going to get out of the car, but your friends are going to get in.
Yeah.
And look at what's happened to you today. 3 times I bit them dual controls, which means if I hadn't, 3 times you would have crashed this car. And the only thing that's different today is who sat next to you.
Yeah.
Think about that, you know. But, yeah, of course, the driving test isn't for that purpose, and it's our role to educate people. It would just be nice if DVSA followed their own syllabus, because if ADI examiners aren't looking for it, ever, then it's very difficult to provide training or enough training, sufficient training around it, when you've also got to help people develop the things that DVSA are looking for on part threes and standards checks. So, and it should be everything. To me, it should be everything. Yeah. You know, there's cause and effect, and all we're doing is remedying the effect.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not going to save people from killing themselves.
No, but we'll be onto a rant on the DVSA if we're not careful.
Yeah,
but it does. I can virtually write every part three report from our main examiner right now.
Yes,
now, I know what's going to be in there, pass or fail. Yeah. You know, there are certain things that will be in there, and none of what you've said has
well. Yeah.
You know, the emotive side will be there at all.
Yeah,
but might be in the little chat afterwards, but never in that.
No,
it's MSM, system of driving, whatever you want to call it, and you know, there may be a bit about level of instruction, but also about that. What I'm getting more and more now is, are you getting them, or are you satisfied with the level they're driving at, which is probably not good enough for post-test? And if, you know, are you just saying, great? An example I've got is one of our PDIs didn't pass her part three because she was happy with a lad doing 20 mile an hour around rural roads and said to him, well done. And the examiner didn't like that. You know, and I'm saying to them, well, you might as well maybe say well done for keeping the car safe or something like that, but add in when, you know, are you always going to want to drive like that around those roads? What are you going to aim for? And it seems to me if we can, I don't like the term box ticking, but it almost seems to me that the examiner wants to hear that.
Yeah. seems to be the case that they look at, they overestimate the importance of our input, in that if we give input that's good, that means that's what they will always do for the rest of their life.
And
of course, that's not going to be the case. That's good for where they are at that stage, at that point in time, with the expectation being that they will continue to develop from it. So, you know, there's no context really there. And in a different context, he could be absolutely right. But just as a generalization, I just find, that they're a little bit over-focused on instructor input and the exact words that we use, and not nearly as focused on the human elements that actually, you know, caused the person to do what they're doing in the first place. So,
which is where all of your courses are focusing on now.
Yeah, I think rightly so. I think we have to.
Yeah.
I think anyone within the industry that has a passion for improving the standards is kind of pushing in the same direction. I think it's widely kind of accepted that that's where driving tuition needs to go. And there's some brilliant people doing some brilliant things, you know.
I've got an example I can think of, a PDI I've got, who has just done 3 sessions with a learner, just practicing. She's not on a trainee license yet, so I'm sitting in the back and she's taking this girl. And the goal last week was that the learner wanted to get better at moving off. Okay, so I then say, because the girl can move off.
Yeah, yeah.
No problem with that. Yeah. So I say, hang on, before we move, I do actually move off. Is there anywhere where she is particularly concerned about moving off? And it was when she stopped at junctions with the possibility of somebody behind her.
Yeah.
So, you know. So let's do, why? You know, why is it there and not? It's not moving off at the side of the road where there's nothing coming. it's not moving off.
Yeah.
In the prospect of, my God, there's somebody there. Yeah. You know, so
thought, feelings,
the feelings and the emotions, which affect the behaviour.
And I think, you know, if we can raise people's awareness of it, which is, you know, anyone who's been on our courses will know that pretty much all we bang on about is the need to raise awareness, and because we fix things for ourselves once we're aware of them.
Yes.
So you know, it's really powerful, just not trying to fix everything for people, just making them aware that this is your problem.
People will have gaps in their knowledge. But not many people have a gap in knowing what they could have done, should have done, and maybe you ought to do next time. It can be frustrating, the journey getting there, but you know, most of them are at some point definitely consciously incompetent. And then we get the consciously competent, as I call it, driving by numbers.
And then they get to the point where, you know, where they don't know the numbers anymore, and but it's
I always say the example of pulling up at the side of the road. How do you work out how to do it without hitting the curb? And 5 or 6 hours later, they pull up at the side of the road and say, how did you manage to do that?
Don't know.
That's great, because we really have covered everything I wanted to. There's just one thing left, though. So I think we ought to give a little bit of credit on your tours around the country to your travel agent. That's one of the wonderful sites. I think there ought to be a book coming out. Views from the hotel rooms.
Knowles Universal Nations Tours, I think, is the official company name. Just don't put it into an acronym.
Yeah, so I know the acronyms that you've come up with for us.
I'm quite good at that. It's a skill.
Well, training wheels, something. No, we won't go into anyway.
Associated training, I think it was something.
It was something like that, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I like it.
Yeah.
And if there's a few of you,
for our team, social media consultant to put it in somewhere.
You could have a team.
Right. Thank you ever so much, Lee, for taking the time over this. I'm ever so grateful to you. It's a shame that we've done it now and not just before you came back down to the West Country.
No.
But you know, you've got a pretty packed program for the rest of the year going around the country, haven't you?
Yeah, we are visiting not far from me next month, Liverpool and Shrewsbury. Then we move on to Scotland. Ooh. Still there, yeah.
Yep, yes.
Something flashed on my screen and it all paused.
Yeah.
Scotland in March, and I don't know where I am after that. We're up in the northeast in May. Yeah. I can't think where we are in April. I think we're down south.
Go to the website, there's dates all through the year.
Yes.
And of course, also, you've got the online stuff and you're ready, willing, and able to travel. To do one-to-one in-car training with people.
Yeah, Maidstone on Sunday for Monday. Swindon, the start of March. And, I've got somebody that I'm seeing that's just about 20 minutes down the road from me as well. So that's handy.
So you're not getting the travel agent to book a hotel?
He's not
one,
booking then. Them ones, no. No, he's not booking them ones. I swear, I don't know how he does it.
I'll put a link into the notes when this goes out so that people can
view the wonderful
parts of interest and they can come and have a look and book you and leave the auctioneman at home.
Yeah, best choice they'll ever make.
Yeah. Okay, Lee, thanks ever so much. So I'd like to thank Lee for giving up his time to give us that very illuminating discussion about where knowledgeable instructor training is and what it can provide for you. There'll be a link to their website in the notes accompanying this episode. And if you have found this enjoyable, then please go to our Facebook page, The XL Podcast, and give us a like, and you can follow us from there for all future editions. So thank you very much for listening, and look forward to catching you next time.